Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
You sounded like you actually wanted to be here this time. instead of afraid to be on the podcast.
Yeah, I forgot what was going on.
What are we doing?
We're not here to play games.
No, these are games we've already played.
Yep.
So today we are going to be recapping our trip to not Kansas City.
Nope.
No.
Nashville.
Where we played, how many games in like 24 hours, Kiwi?
Yeah, seven.
Plus caught a hockey game.
Yep.
Productive trip.
Indeed.
So yeah, well, I figured we'll just go through the games we played and discuss. So not quite our immediate reactions. Some of them we have played before. Some of us have played, and some of us none of have played.
Yeah, of the seven games, we played one that none of us had played before. And then the other ones, it was usually onesies or twosies that hadn't played before.
So first up, we played a game of Fire in the Library by Tony Miller and John Prather. This was one I picked up at Gen Con and really enjoyed, and it was Kiwi's first play of it.
First full play.
And BP's first correct play.
Which, in one of the games, I actually won.
We don't talk about that.
Oh.
That was actually the game that we played all together. Yeah, it's a fun push your luck. It has hand management as one of the mechanics, which I guess with the tools and stuff, but I tended to just like blow through all my tools, so I don't really have a hand to manage at all.
Well, sometimes you get kind of in like a cycle where, like, you know, you get some good tools, so you go for like a high point card and you burn them all, and then you have no tools, so then you kind of play it safe and rebuild your tools. So.
This is one of those push your luck games that I think makes us realize that we really enjoy push your luck games. So like Quacks of Quedlinburg, this one has that mechanic with pulling the books out of the bag. It's just really fun. And I would like to play more push your luck games like this.
It's very satisfying, like pulling it out and then looking at it, that dramatic reveal.
Yeah.
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 Plus the whole theme of the game too is really fun. Like, you know, you're rushing in to try and save these books, and it's just pretty cool.
Yep. And then it's all going to shit. Like, you know, you're revealing more cards. There's more fire. There's just more. It just goes downhill.
Yeah.
Really
and,
fast.
And I like the idea, like the mechanic of the fire spreading, just like the idea that you're like rushing in and maybe you're like accidentally pushing stuff over and that's pushing the fire around.
Yep.
Like it's just like, I feel like the mechanics really work well with the theme. And I also really like Tony Miller. And so when you picked it up, I was really happy about it.
Yep.
And I kind of want my own copy because you live way too far away.
Yeah. And I don't know, before Kiwi arrived and Eric and I played a game, just the two of us. And I feel like with that one versus the three player, because that was the first time we've played it through, at least I've played it through as a full three player. Usually I think Eric and I had played that once, but incorrectly. And then we played a quick game before Kiwi arrived. And that push your luck was just like so much fun when it was just the two of you. Cause like the competition is really on, right? There's just like this one other player that you really want to beat. And yeah, so you're constantly going back into the bag and thinking you're going to do it.
I've played it with now 2, 3, and I think 5 players.
How was it with the larger?
It could drag on a little bit because you do have downtime while you wait for the bag. So depending, it could slow down a little. I think fewer is more ideal, but it is a lot of fun when there's like 5 people all like watching people pull out of the bag and cheer and talk trash and all that stuff. Yeah. So.
I also didn't realize that Beth Sobel was one of the artists on it.
Yeah.
I do want to, since he brought up that Beth Sobel, who like on the show notes did Viticulture, Wingspan, other games we've played like Arboretum. I mean, the cards themselves do have some good art to them that make them interesting. Not just, I mean, the tools you have because they're very clear. But also very interesting, like the cloak or the glove, the library cart, but also the cards that catch on fire and just like the way that they progress through the fire. And it's a very simplistic style, but yeah, it's still still enough to kind of elevate the game a little bit, if you will.
And it helps the game too, because you can look at the cards and see like how screwed you are.
Yeah, when your card is full of more flames than library shelves, you're screwed.
All right, so we will ask the will you play it? Would you play it again, Kiwi?
Yes, absolutely.
Especially since you said you now want a copy of your own.
Yeah, yep. I would like my own. I would like our.
I want to get all the upgrades at Gen Con because he had fancy pieces and stuff. BP.
Yeah. Especially since I got to win a round.
Yeah, I mean, I've played it multiple times, and I will continue to do so.
So that was our one. That was our one game on Friday night.
All right, and then we played the Sherlock Files Elementary Entries by Marty and Lucas and Joseph Izquierdo.
Izquierdo?
Yeah.
Sure.
Prior
sounds good.
Best American guess.
So how would you describe it? So it's a Sherlock game. So you're trying to solve the crime. And then there's you draw some cards that have like clues on them. But you can only say like part of the card. Like if it's underlined, you can say the underlined text. Or if it's a headline, you can say that. So everyone kind of draws their own. And then you got to decide, like, is this useful? In which case I'll play it in the display area or I'll discard it if I don't think it's useful. And so we all do that and we're all trying to piece together things and go, oh, you know, I heard about old David. And then you're like, I know about David. And then we figure out David is nobody important.
Yes, there are some red herrings for sure.
Yeah. So then, and then once all the cards are played, if you discarded a card, then you can talk about all the stuff. So you have to remember all the cards you discarded to try and piece all the information together. And then there's 10 questions you have to answer, and that's how you gain starting points. And then for every card that you played that was useless, like doesn't do anything for the story, you lose a point.
I'd like you to go ahead and admit that I'm now the rules guy.
Okay. I'm sure he would be happy to
never go. Yeah, actually, yeah, that would be enjoyable if one of you nerds could teach this or just any game. Just one time.
I love your rules, Kiwi. You are such a good rules person and instructor.
All right. Well, stop sucking up now. So we picked this one up at the game store in Manassas because I think Paxton saw it and was like, oh, Sherlock, and BP loves Sherlock. Mm-hmm. And then we picked it up after reading a little bit about it. And like the box has three different mysteries in it. And there's, I think, 32 cards per mystery. And they could be like pictures. They could be statements. They could some of them make maps. Mm-hmm. And so you can like map out like where stuff is. And BP and I had played the first two mysteries and then we got to play the last mystery with Eric this time around. This is one of those games, like I think I've brought it up in the past. I don't particularly care for games that make me feel stupid. So
welcome to my world.
So consulting detective. I know you guys really like it, but I don't particularly care for it because I feel really dumb when I play it. But when we played Detective at Gen Con, it was one of those things where you being able to piece all the information together, stuff was on cards, and then there were the questions at the end made me feel less stupid because I felt like the questions were more geared. Because with consulting detective, it'd be crazy stuff. It'd be like, you know, who was the body in the river? And you're like, what? Body in the river, like we never learned about a body in the river.
Just makes you want to go through it again.
And so, but the Sherlock Files with the cards, like I just felt like the first time BP and I played the first mystery, like we did really well, and then the second mystery we did really bad, and then this last mystery, like we did pretty good, but like I never felt dumb at the end. It felt like more like a game with a little bit of a puzzle, and I appreciated that in terms of a detective. And I really hope that they do more because they there's a blurb in like the instruction book, and I'm using that term loosely. It was a page, like the back of it is more like what the system is, and they call it like the Q system, I think. And it's supposed to be more like this is a game system that they can just continually add mysteries to and just use the same rule set with just different mysteries and keep adding a lot like Exit or Unlock or any of those kind of things.
Yeah, so it has that element of it could be kind of like a party game in that you can have multiple people playing in it, working. Yeah, it's cooperative.
So it's up to six.
Yeah, it's cooperative. So everybody's trying to work together. But for those of us who do like the whole detecting type games where you're trying to solve a mystery, it's good. And like Kiwi keeps saying, I think consulting detective, while you're going through the case, you feel like you're doing really well. And you always just get to that conclusion and you're like, WTF did this come from? You know, like there's just like some weird way. And like the Sherlock in that game always seems to be able to solve the mystery in like only two steps. But I mean, I grew up with like 321B Baker Street and playing that. I still have a copy of it, and I still sometimes just even just play it by myself, trying to solve crimes without using the board. But this was that same element of having solvable crimes that, again, you can kind of keep going back to in a very easy fashion. And it was just very intriguing because it's also low, like tech, you know, like with Detective, when we were there, it seemed like there were a lot of components to it. You needed some electronic device. This was just right. A deck of cards, like the whole box is like smaller, like a mass market, you know, novel size. And so it's compact, so you can take it easy. And there's like three games in that like mass market compact size, and you don't need a whole lot of space. I think one night, in fact, when we played it on an ottoman. So I don't know. Those are all, again, kind of good positives with it. What were your thoughts, Eric?
I mean, it's good. It was like elegant in simplicity, kind of. It was a little short for me, but I think I like the games where you really get the Sherlock's, where you get into it and you're like living in the story for like a good hour. But I mean, in terms of as a game, like, yeah, I mean, it's interesting all the different takes that they have on these, like, you know, this versus Detective, which is a more realistic crime. Like, you do a lot more like, you know, beat work as a cop in that one versus like solving fantastical mysteries. Chronicles of Crime is another one that does sort of more electronic things. I mean, I like all of them. So I'll play any of these sort of kind of solving mystery games.
So I guess then, Eric, since we gave you the box so that you could play the other two mysteries, since we'd played all three at this point, would you play it again?
Yeah, I mean, I'll play it again. Just need to find people, because the people I tried Time Stories with, it didn't go well.
Yeah, I think this one's pretty different than Time Stories, but I think it's kind of in that same sort of.
Yeah, I think it's in the same
mystery genre type. I would definitely play it again. I mean, I obviously need to wait for different mysteries, but I liked the system, so I hope that they put out more stuff in that system.
Right.
And I'd also be interested now in trying some of the like escape room. I think Unlock is the one that won the Spiel from Cosmos. So trying some of those Unlock games would be interesting as well.
I think BP and I would definitely enjoy those. So,
yeah, yes, you know me, and I love Sherlock.
Next up, we played For Sale, which we have previously discussed on the podcast.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, we did a whole episode on it.
Yep.
Episode 14, I think, if you want to go back and listen to it. So this is one of those games that we've played on the podcast that I was then like, this is a great game. And I purchased it and put it in the quiver.
Which apparently we also learned you now have a bolt on the way as well.
No, it's not on the way. I have it. It's here.
It's already full of games. And
it's not full of games yet. I'm working on it. I think my only complaint is we have the travel version of For Sale because I didn't want a bunch of crazy stuff going in the quiver, and the money in the travel. It sucks. That is my only complaint.
I mean, it's fine for traveling, I feel like.
Yeah, I would like to figure out a different way to do money and not use those little
cardboard,
very very thin cardboard or thick paper, however you want to look at it, but I would play it again.
Yeah, it's always a fun one. I think we play through pretty quick. I think Kiwi always wins.
I try.
Yeah, I mean, I usually, well, I think the difference is like I try to go for high numbers and you guys tend to go for the places you actually want to live, so I have a distinct advantage.
I do tend to love the cheaper cards. Although I think I surprised you guys with getting some of the higher bid items towards the end.
No, it was a castle.
Yeah.
It's awesome. We weren't surprised at all.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Whatever.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, we've played games, you know, Baron Park, I think we've said, felt like a dated game, but it only came out 3 years ago. Whereas this one came out
25 years ago,
and it does not feel like a dated game to me.
Right. It's a fun one. Recommend. Then we played a game of Tussy Mussy.
Yep.
This is an Elizabeth Hargrave game that came out recently, right?
Yeah, it came out. They did the Kickstarter for it last year. It won the...
Which, of course, you backed, right?
Yeah, of course. Well, it was Elizabeth Hargrave and Beth Sobel again, so...
What's not to back it? Right.
Yeah. It could have been literally anything. She's got... I don't know if Beth Sobel's doing the art, but Elizabeth Hargrave has another game coming out about butterflies.
Very nature.
Mariposia, I think. Yeah, I really like... How the theme, like she's doing very different themes. I think, you know, butterfly games have been done, a couple of them. I know there's one on Kickstarter earlier. I really like how she uses those themes, and she's got the flowers here, you know, the birds with wingspan, butterflies. So I just like the combination of how she brings all that stuff in. So,
yep. And so this game plays, you draw some flower cards and then you look at them. And then you offer them to your neighbor, one face up, one face down, and then they pick one. And then they do the same thing until everyone has four cards, and then you score it. And then you do that in a few rounds. And then the game's over.
Sound like you were pretty impressed.
Oh, no, that's just my, that's how I describe rules. I'm very, you know, you got to stay, keep it dry. But,
Yeah, I like the combination of the bluffing and then the eye cut you choose, because there were definitely some times where I got cards where I was like, ooh, I want this card. But if I put it face down and put up like this other, but this other card is good. If I put that face up, like Eric's going to know that something's good is under the, because why would I give up this face up card?
He sure didn't.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking in my head. So I like the eye cut you choose mechanic in terms of that. Where I'm going to get a card and you're going to get a card, but it's based on what you choose. And then the bluffing mechanic to try and force your opponent into choosing a card that you want them to choose so that you can get the other one.
There was enough. It wasn't like too many scoring options, which could get like bogged down, but there was enough to always keep it interesting. The whole bouquet versus
keepsakes
was kind of, I think it took me the first round to figure out what the hell that was talking about. So that was an interesting piece. But yeah, otherwise, it's a fun little mechanic.
Yeah, I think it's just, I don't know, for me, because it's in the quiver, I just always think of it as a travel game, because this was not my first play around. It was just Eric's first play around. QE introduced it to me during another hockey trip weekend. So it's fast. It's pretty straightforward. And, you know, I feel like it would be pretty straightforward to learn. It's not like, you know, many other games out there. And of course, the art is nice to look, you know, nice to look at. There's flavor text on each of the cards. And like, sometimes I'll just play the cards based on the flavor text. Because like, especially like the purple cards have just really interesting things about like flowers. Like I am loyal or like weird things like that, but they also really go along with the whole idea of flowers. And I think when Kiwi introduced it to me, he said that Tussy Mussy was like some British thing about, and that's why there's the bouquet versus the keepsake. It's like about you give your friends kind of these keepsake flowers, right? It's
And the color of the flower indicates like different things like friendship and loyalty and love. And it's all based on the color. In fact, the booklet in the instruction, like once it's done with the instructions, it actually tells you like, hey, you know, yellow means this and blue means this. It was like this whole thing.
Was it like Victorian times or
something? Yeah, it might've been. I'd have to look at the instruction booklet again, but yeah, that's something older, like flower giving type things where that's, you would give them it. They were used as symbols and the color was the symbol.
Next up, we swung by
the Game Point.
The Game Cafe.
It also had like a different name on the outside. Like, I don't know.
not my favorite board game cafe.
It was more a cafe that had board games, but it was
and one, a decent selection. It wasn't bad. Yeah. Like, I mean,
it was a pretty good selection.
But I feel like their emphasis, because like when you walk in, they're like, hey, limit your game playing time on weekends right to an hour. I think
it was between 11 and 1, I think.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
Yeah, I think
because it was small. That was my only complaint. It was very packed, and that was my only real complaint about the place. I thought the food was good, the service was good, the game selection was good. I felt very cramped in the store.
There were a lot of people not playing games. So
and I think that's the point. Like, I think it's more like it really is a mixture of like this local cafe trying to serve like the local neighborhood, but also wanting to get into that board gaming aspect. But I feel like it's having an identity crisis, and it needs to figure out, is it going to be the local neighborhood coffee shop and allow, because I mean, if you're limiting board gamers to an hour time, are you going to limit the people working on their laptops?
Yeah, there were two tables with people just working on laptops.
Right.
Game Point Bongo East was the name on the sign.
Okay. So anyway, yeah, Game Board Cafe aside, it allowed us to play some different games as well.
Yep.
Yep.
So first up, we played Magic Maze.
Which Kiwi and I have played.
Yeah, BP and I have played, and we talked about it on episode 7.5, the bonus episode.
You're not gonna do your bonus
episode.
Yeah, and this time we included Paxton too.
Yes, Paxton was also there, so we had a 4-player game. So in Magic Maze, you have a movement card. Each player has a movement card, and that's the only movement they can make. And then everybody controls each of the pieces as you attempt to gather a weapon and leave.
Yeah, your adventurer is trying to get gear to go on an adventure, but you have to steal it from the mall because you have no money.
So yeah, and then you can't talk. So you just sort of everyone has to move their pieces around to steal their weapon and then escape the mall.
Yes, and then there's the passive aggressive token.
The do something pawn.
Yes.
That apparently got pretty aggressive during our game. It's Kiwi and I never got that aggressive with it, but I have heard people who have gotten very aggressive with the passive aggressive pawn.
Yeah, because this is another one with communication limits. So I can't tell you like, hey, we need to move this pawn south.
Right.
That's what the pawn is for, is you put it in front of somebody to say, hey, you need to do something.
Right.
I can't tell you what it is, but I need you to do something.
I don't know. It was kind of chaotic. There's a timer going. Everyone's running around trying to accomplish things, of which I could never figure out what those things were.
Yeah, I don't think you or Paxton were very into it.
No, there's so much on the board that like I'd be like, all right, I know that I'm supposed to do something, but like I literally need to take a second to stare at this piece and figure out what it's supposed to be doing because I have no idea. Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, is there a weapon on the board? And then I was like, I wouldn't see the weapons because it's just a smattering of colors on this board. So I don't know.
Fine. It's one that I know I really enjoyed like the first time through. And in fact, Kiwi and I played it a couple times and then we played it with my cousin and we really liked it then. But yeah, we could tell you guys just were not into it. I kind of like that challenge of, oh my God, you know, it's that pressure element of simultaneous, right? Kind of real time play in like Kitchen Rush and things like that, where it's like,
right.
Oh my God. And yeah, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of colors, but I don't know, like trying to figure it all out is kind of the fun aspect of it to me too.
See, I liked in Kitchen Rush because yeah, you've got the chaos and stuff, but like, I know my objective is or what we're all trying to do. The challenge there becomes that you need more people to do it than you have available usually, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then that's when you start overlapping and things. I don't even think the talking is like that big of a deal, except that maybe in the case of, okay, you guys have played it a handful of times and I'd never played it. Then like you're getting frustrated or not frustrated, but you expect me to do something, but I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing because I'm new at the game.
Right.
Mm. Whereas like in Kitchen Rush, at least we could be like, okay, I need you to do this.
Yeah, I think it's just the no talking piece is just a good way to negate some of that alpha gamerness that you get in other co-op games.
Right, it makes sense. Otherwise, I could just sit there and not.
Yeah, I'd tell you, like, you do this, here, do this.
Like,
yeah.
I think it's a fine rule. I also had a headache, so maybe that did not help with it.
Maybe another playthrough, just now that you sort of have a better understanding and then making sure you don't have a headache.
Right.
Give it another try and see if it changes your mind.
Yeah, I would try it again.
Yeah, I would definitely play it again. I think BP and I need to sit down and make it past mission 3 because either we play for the first time or we introduce it to somebody. So we always start at scenario 1, and I don't think we've made it past scenario 3 yet because, you know, by the time we get there, we've played through missions like a couple times. And so, you know, we've already played for an hour and a half. It's like, okay, let's play something different too.
Yeah. I love it. It is probably one of my favorite games.
I could also stand for an upgraded design of it.
Yeah, I think the copy they had there was a little worn, but yeah.
Yeah, it had seen some play, that's for sure.
Yeah, but it's really cool too. Like, I know the tiles have a lot going on, and I think that's how they're designed, right? To add kind of complication to it to a certain extent. But there's, I think when we were playing with my cousin, I actually started to notice that there's like people in the shops, and there's like, you know, stuff inside the shops, and like it's more than just like the tiles with, hey, you go here in an escalator and, you know, here are the weapons and here are the search options. Like, eventually there's like tiles where you can actually see, like, I think there were like mice or people or some things in it.
I know there's like security guards you have to get around, and cameras, and the dwarf can fit through like little holes in the wall to be able to sneak in other places.
Yeah, and I like that too. Like, each scenario kind of adds a different level, because I think you explained to Eric as we were wrapping up the one round is that eventually you get to the point where when you flip the timer, then you switch movements too, which really gets chaotic. I think that's the furthest we've ever made it. Like, because you were so used to just looking for the pawns to do this one move, and now you have to remember like a totally different move. I don't know. I think that's interesting because it just adds like all these new chaotic elements. And maybe I think we were playing the first one through without talking, but I think you can talk the first round through, right?
It says you can if you want to.
Right? Yeah. You may as well practice the not talking piece.
But it may have made it, since we're introducing, you know, two new people, it may have made it more fun to at least have that. I think, again, that's why it's built that way. So you start to get used to the mechanics, and you get used to the chaos, and you get used to the challenges little by little, which I like.
Yep. Yeah, me too.
All right. And then next we played Formula D.
Yep. So this is one that Eric and I had played a while ago.
Yeah, a long time.
A couple of years ago. And then BP and Paxton had not played it before.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an interesting racing game where you have gears and you have to pick the gear. You're shifting gears, so you could go up or down. The gears equate to dice, and those dice have different face numbers. So the higher gear, the faster you go and the more spaces you move. But it's Formula One, so you have turns you have to get through. In order to make it safely through the turn, you have to stop a certain number of times within that turn. We played the basic mode, which was basically the cars had a certain number of hit points, and all the damage that you would normally take came off the hit points. In the advanced mode, you've got like engine shocks, tires, all kinds of stuff that go into the car. And so you take damage to different places based on what happened to your car. And it is a push your luck, because if you have to, you know, if you shift up to try and get through a turn, but then you roll too high, I think there were a couple instances where people were like, I'm just going to go for it. And then I know for me, I blasted through one of the turns and took a ton of damage when I just blasted through the turn. But then I was able to get ahead a little bit But because I needed to slow down to not take as much damage, I ended up getting passed. And I think third is what I placed because I was afraid to do more damage and get knocked out of the race.
BP, what was your strategy?
I'm trying to remember, you know, me and strategies. I was just, you know, I think we said this towards the end. I was trying to get through without, I think we laughed at me too, without having any repairs or whatever damage to my car. And you're like, yeah, that's not the point of racing, right? To get through without any damage as slowly as possible.
If you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing.
So apparently I remember though when Kiwi and I went kart, we did the racing go-karts.
That was something we did cartwheel racing. I was very dizzy by the end.
That would be crazy. The go-karts. We did that one year for my birthday. And I remember just almost the same as I played this. I was just trying to be such a perfectionist, right? Like getting through the curves that like he beat me like all the time. And I was just like, I would not be a good racer. I think I came in last.
I believe you did.
But I had the cleanest car.
So I think my only complaint about the game really is the size of the cars. When Eric and I played this, it was on Tabletop Simulator, so it really wasn't a factor.
Mm. We're so tiny.
The board, yeah, the cars were so small. And I think it had to be because, you know, I think the high, like the most spaces you could go was 30 if you were in sixth gear and you rolled a 30. So like you could zoom around that board. So the board had to be big. And in order to make the board not humongous, they just made the cars really small. I did like that they had four different cars. So you could pick what type of car you wanted to be. And I think there's an alternate rule where you can have a team of cars and then you can like essentially draft off each other like you would in real racing. So that's really my only complaint. I really enjoy the game. I like the push your luck aspect of it. It is a dice rolling and, you know, move around the table, but I like that they've changed it a little bit with how you can shift lanes and going into and out of the turn. So it almost like it does feel a little bit like racing because they've set the turns up so that, you know, you want to start on the outside of the turn. And if you can get to the inside of the turn, just like you would in real racing, it's very cool and I like it. And I know Paxton, while we were playing it, he had actually said like, this game is really cool and I like it.
I had a much better time with the four player. It was okay with two, but I thought it was way more fun this time with four.
Yeah.
It just made it more interesting. There was more happening. It felt more like a race.
Yeah, and I think there were a couple of times where we got
like a race, except with this one person who's just like dragging towards the end, being like, hey, BP, your car okay back there?
Yeah, well, and even then, though, like I think we got bunched up a couple of times in turns and like people couldn't go where they wanted to and, you know, ended up taking a little bit of damage or had to roll to see if they took damage just because we sort of bunched up in turns and it just ended up that way. I haven't played with the advanced rules with the different parts of the car. I really would like to try that. And then I know expansion wise, the expansions aren't really expansions per se, but they're more tracks. And so, and this also has a double track. So if you flip the board over, there's another track on the other side. And then the add-ons are just, I think there's like four or five additional tracks you can buy to go with it. And again, it's a push your luck we're enjoying push your luck.
Yeah, I think we are.
Yeah. So I think Kiwi, you'd play it again.
I would play it again. Yeah.
EP.
I mean, I'm always up for a game. I mean, maybe this time I'll try to just wreck my car and go like hog wild.
Well, I mean, if you lose all your hit points, you're out of the race. So,
I mean, go big or go home.
Yeah, yep. If you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing.
I can just channel my inner Brian and just be like, you know, Paul Walker style when he did the first race. I almost had you. Come on, you got to do
it.
You
never had me. You never had your car. Now, me and the mad scientist got to rip apart the block and rebuild the pistons you just fried.
Yes. Okay, yeah. I need to channel my inner Brian.
Which is weird because I went to channel your inner Ricky Bobby.
Yeah, we're on different.
First or last.
I have no idea what you people are talking about.
Well, she's talking about Fast and the Furious. I'm talking about the Ballad of Ricky Bobby, Talladega Nights, the greatest of all Will Ferrell movies.
It's a low bar.
Okay.
And then we move into the game that nobody had played.
Yep. Then we played Flam Rouge, which is a bike racing game in which you have two racers, a sprinter and a runner.
What the? Rider? Yeah, what they are?
Yeah, I think runner. Yeah.
You got an R and an S.
Yeah.
Yep. You got an R bike and an S bike.
And then you had a deck of cards for each of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you would draw four, basically deck building kind of, draw four cards and play one of them.
And then when you played that one, you lost it forever.
Yeah. So then that would come out of the game, draw another four and select your next one and cycle through till you've gone through all your cards. And if you were not in the pack or you're at the front of the pack, you would get an exhaustion card, which was just a lower number.
Yeah.
The cards just had numbers on them, which would be the distance you moved. If you're in a pack, the pack moves a little more.
Yeah. You gain distance because of drafting, essentially.
Right. So what was your take, BP?
Well, first of all, I want to ask the question that we haven't actually asked in some of these other ones, but I am kind of curious because I had been doing something else when you guys went to the shelves. Why did you guys pull this one off of the shelf?
So it was on the list of games that we wanted to
was
play.
It really?
So that was number one. Yeah, Flam Rouge was on the list.
No, I didn't even.
Number two,
I didn't
I've
know
heard,
either.
a lot of good things about the game.
Okay.
I'm working my way through the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, and the part where I'm at, you know, they're talking about how much they really enjoy Flam Rouge. They're specifically talking about the expansion and how much they enjoy adding the expansion to the game, and they really like it. Huh. And so I wanted to play it because they liked it.
Okay. Yeah, it was kind of boring. I knew that. I think, Eric, you got frustrated about, like, towards the end being like, what's the point?
I wasn't frustrated. I was just like, what is this game?
Yeah. Like, what's the point of getting the exhaustion cards? Because, like, I think we got to the end and you noted, like, no one had even used any of the exhaustion cards.
They didn't really impact anybody's game.
And you know what?
I think I
actually won this game, too.
You did. Yeah.
Yep.
And it was just because, really, I mean, if you think about my strategy, you should have been everybody's strategy. Play all your hard high cards like when you
had
them in
your
hand.
That's all I did. It's just
who
had that last turn had the nine card.
Yeah.
Is who wins, right? Because so your sprinters have like...
Sprinters had higher numbers.
Well, your R's had a more average spread, and your sprinters had a few really high cards, which were nines, and then low cards, twos and threes and fours and stuff. So if you got lucky and your sprinter drew your nine on that last one, you would have gone the furthest, because you're all as a giant clump pretty much the whole way through the board.
Mm-hmm.
And so whoever gets the nine at the end goes furthest in the last one, crosses the finish line and wins. Yeah, I drew four cards, picked the highest number, put it down, reshuffled. And I was basically had my next turn ready to go before.
And there was always the, now this person moves because of this and this. And it was just, I don't know.
Kiwi had to do a lot of moving all the bikes around that we didn't really pay attention to. And then we were still in one big clump.
I mean, I tried to play cards based on, you know, I tried to keep my bikers together, just because I thought that that's how it would be in real life. And so I tried to keep them together. I liked the way some of the mechanic, like I liked the idea of if I play this card, I lose it forever. Mm. I liked the drafting idea because I thought it was pretty thematic. But overall, I agree with you guys. I thought it was boring.
I think you made a good effort trying to turn it into a game. But
I also found all the good aspects of it, too.
It's one of those things where like I think the mechanics go, I liked the mechanics. I felt like they didn't add a whole lot to the theme, and because they didn't add a whole lot to the theme, just the game itself was lesser for it. If that makes sense.
I just don't think they were good mechanics. Like, there was no game there. Well, like there was no choice to make.
Maybe the expansions like add different stuff, but like, I know that like the big pack of bikers is called the Peloton, because that's the name of the expansion. And I learned that on Shut Up and Sit Down because Quinn's learned it. And then he told everybody on the podcast.
Is that why they call that fancy exercise machine that?
Yes. Yeah, I wouldn't play it again. And I also wouldn't, if someone was like, oh, I have the expansion, it makes it better, I would still not play it.
Not that interested.
I might be interested enough to go look to see what the expansion changes, but I still wouldn't want to play it.
You'd pull up Tessie Mussie.
Yeah, I would pull literally anything.
Pretty much any game, yeah.
Skull?
I think, yeah, at the end of it.
I think that's what you had that's said, what I Eric. Said.
I
said,
that, oh, yeah, that is.
I said the real winner, I don't know. The real winner here is Skull.
That is true.
I mean, because I would say at least Skull takes like 2 seconds and I'm done versus this game. Yeah. I was like, oh, man, God. I was like, I don't know if you caught it. I was counting down. I was like, we are 3/4 of the way done. We're halfway done. Oh, man.
What about Biblios?
At least I pretended I was thinking about something in Biblios. Like, I didn't even know what I was supposed to think in this game. I was like, why would I not play the highest card? I guess I could try to predict that you guys are going to play your low cards, but why would I? I'm guessing what you're drawing.
Yeah.
I think the thing is you're trying to, you want to be in the pack so that you get those extra moves ahead, but you don't want to be at the front of the pack because you don't want the exhaustion cards. Because I did get a hand where it was, I had one of my original cards and then the other three were all exhaustion. And I wasn't going to play those exhaustion cards because I didn't want to, I wanted to move further than two.
Yeah, but see, then that's the point. That's the nobody played of. Exhaustion cards. Like, right. Nobody was like to the point that they had to play that. So
you almost got to the point where you had to play an exhaustion card in the game. I agree. I wanted to do the same thing. I played my highest card every single time.
Yeah.
And I accomplished that. I was never in the front, or I was rarely in the front. And then I just sort of kept pace and I was always in the clump and I didn't have to really do anything.
Yeah, I just don't know what you could change to make it better.
Yeah.
And so as a result, I can't imagine that playing it with the expansion would make it better because I don't know what you would change to make it better.
Right.
It was just kind of.
And it's not like I'm like, okay, I think I know you would have this card. So I think you're trying to do this. I was like, I don't know. They drew their cards. They probably got a 9 or a 4 and they're going to move forward. So I'm going to move forward as far as I can. And then. Because I got a high card this time, so I'm probably not going to have a high card next time. So that way I will average and be in the middle.
Yep, agreed. I wouldn't play it again.
All right, so out of all, can I ask a question?
No.
Yeah.
I'm just going to take over since this is a different episode. I feel like we don't necessarily have to go through all the standard questions. Out of all the games we played on this trip, which was your favorite?
I'm going to go with Fire in the Library.
Can I say Fire in the Library?
Yeah,
say whatever you want. Yeah.
I'm going to say Fire in the Library.
Okay.
With a second being the Sherlock game.
I think play-wise, Formula D would have been my number two, just because I enjoyed playing it. Just because I felt like with Magic Maze, it was kind of like, what was that game that we played that I didn't particularly care for it because I felt like you guys weren't having a good time? Like, I could tell that I could tell that Eric and Paxton were not having an enjoyable time, so my play experience was less enjoyable because of it.
Yeah. Right.
So I wouldn't put Magic Maze number two, but I think how I feel about the game, Magic Maze would be my number two. Does that make sense?
So yeah.
I'm ranking it off the play experience.
Yeah. No, I...
That's the question, isn't it? What's your favorite game? It's what did you have the most fun playing?
Yeah. So I would say Fire in the Library followed by Formula D.
See, I'm going to have to go with Eric on this. I really liked the Sherlock Files. Fire in the Library, it was so much fun, even though I still don't know how I was awake that late at night, but and in a good mood and not a sour mood. I agree with Kiwi's assessment of Magic Maze, though. I would have to say that despite all of your guys' love of Formula D, it would not be higher on my list.
Oh, I don't love Formula D. I like it. I'm not big into racing, I guess. It just doesn't really click for me, but I mean, I'd play it again. I don't think I loved it as much as like Kiwi and Paxton did.
Yeah.
But I'm not a big race person, so.
Which is fine. It's always, I think with Kiwi too, it's always nice to be able to find something that your kid also likes to play.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think it's great. Yeah. It's a great game. It's just not quite for me.
All right. So I'm going to do my outro.
Yeah, absolutely. Outro the shit out of it.
Okay. So if you have any recommendations of games you'd like to hear our impressions on, or you know of a fun game cafe that might also entice us with some local hockey, hit us up on the Twitter or Instagram at FirstTurnCast, or good old-fashioned email, firstturntabletop@gmail.com. And the podcasting camel says, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. Apparently, he had some gum in his mouth.
It sounds like it was a voice actor from like the 1960s stop motion Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
I still think we should figure out how to dress up as Sherlock for Halloween some year.
Combined as a single Sherlock? Like you're gonna Voltron into a Sherlock?
And then he's like, so why aren't these cows like used in the military? And I'm like, oh my God, like this is where
how would you use a cow in the military?
Well, you don't know. We haven't tried it.
I can't imagine that it would be very good.
Sharpen their antlers and release them into the enemy compound to roam around.
Did not realize that would go so sideways.
Really?